I have had the opportunity over the years to be in the position of the person I'm about to introduce. I find that to be another fun job that Dr. Maurer gives me. I think my colleague will probably agree with that because we've had the opportunity, the two of us over the years, to visit lots of affiliates. I'm not sure what he's going to learn from New York. Maybe the things he's going to learn from New York are not the things he wanted to learn from New York. But nevertheless, I have never gone to another affiliate without coming away with some kind of positive Federation experience. I'll be curious to know what it is. But there is always something. This is a unique organization. We have unique people in the leadership. I have unique colleagues. Each one of my colleagues has a different approach to expressing our message and to bringing to another affiliate what their point of view is and what the national point of view is. It's interesting to hear the spin they put on it because I know the spin I put on it. And among all of us, we have again changed what it means to be blind in this country. So, for a different spin on the Federation's message, I'd like to give to you my colleague from Baltimore, Maryland, Anil Lewis.
Won't you take me with you there?
Man, I really feel at home now. I never realized I have a southern accent until I come to a place like New York. Up until then, people say, you don't sound like you're from Atlanta. I don't know how you sound like from Atlanta. Carl is absolutely right. I think that we all kind of embrace the philosophy of the organization in our own unique way, and it is my pleasure to share a little bit of that with you. But before I do, let me bring you greetings from our national office. Dr. Mark Maurer, our national president, I'm sure would love to be here, but excuse me, we have 52 affiliates across the country, and he can't be at everywhere at the same time. But in his stead, I'm serving as your national representative, and it is indeed my pleasure to be here in New York. And don't worry about the Danishes and the coffee. I'm raised Southern Baptist, so I can overtalk anyone eating a Danish or drinking a cup of coffee. If I can't do that, need to send me back to Georgia. It is indeed my pleasure to be here with my colleague, Carl Jacobson. I no longer serve as an affiliate president, but when I did, it was nice to be one of the sister affiliates in the struggle of equality, opportunity, and security for the blind. And I must tell you, President Jacobson, that you have done a tremendous job in shepherding this affiliate. I've just noticed yesterday, and especially this morning, you know, you can tell the true test of something when things don't go as smoothly as you anticipate. And then when you see individuals that are rising to the challenge of making things right that may not have gone quite right, then you recognize that you have a backbone that will survive any test. And I think I should applaud all of you for the patience that you exhibited starting this morning, but even more so the collaborative effort to deal with all the issues in order to get the convention started. So to you, President Jacobson, I applaud you. To you, New York affiliate, I applaud you as well. I love traveling around the country because I can leave Georgia, I can leave Baltimore, and I can still feel at home because everywhere I go, there's the Federation family. And you have indeed already made me feel so welcome here in New York City, even though I have a southern accent. I stated earlier that I was the affiliate president of Georgia. I am no longer. I used to be the scholarship chairman. I am no longer. I used to serve in a variety of capacities, which I no longer serve, but it is indeed my joy to serve this organization now in a new role. I am the Director of Strategic Communications. I work in the Governmental Affairs Office under John Perret. And well, there are no guarantees. I have learned so much in the time that I've been there. Dr. Maurer was a tremendous mentor. The staff there is tremendous support. And I have never had a job that I've enjoyed so much as what I'm doing now. So I thank you guys for providing me with that opportunity. On with the report. It's my role now to talk about the things that the national office has done over the past years. But when I say this, I need for everyone to understand, because I think that there's a difficulty in understanding that we are one organization. Chapters have a priority. I tell the story of when I became the chapter of the Atlanta, the president of the Atlanta chapter back in the late 90s. And I worked so hard to grow my chapter, and I started fundraising for the chapter, and didn't really focus on the affiliate, didn't even focus on national efforts. And then I became the affiliate president. And I said, now I got to focus on trying to get the chapters to help fund the affiliate. And that was kind of hypocritical, but it was necessary. So I had to readjust the paradigm of the chapter members to recognize that we're bigger than the chapter. We are an affiliate. And I raised monies. Then I messed around, got elected to the National Board of Directors, and had to reshape the paradigm again and get my affiliate to understand that we're not just in this game alone, that we have an obligation to a national organization of individuals who are sharing in this struggle. So I want you guys not to suffer in the way that I did through that growth, but understand that we are one organization. We are the National Federation of the Blind. One of the big things that we're focusing on right now, and I must put this up front, is Braille literacy. We recognize as an organization, contrary to many societies' understandings, that technology is not a substitute for Braille. Audio, talking computers, all that, there is no substitute for Braille. You can listen all you want to all the audiobooks, but listening to the word superfluous will not tell you how to spell it. Listening to a story will not show you where the commas and the periods go. So you cannot be literate unless you're actually able to put your fingers on these words. And that's what we're focusing on, because we know that literacy breeds success. And we want all of our blind youth and our blind adults to be successful. So to focus on this Braille literacy initiative, I want you guys to stay abreast of what's going on by visiting braille.org on a regular basis, because we as an organization on the national level, on the affiliate level, and even small chapters are doing a tremendous job in making sure that Braille is put in the IEPs of blind students, that Braille instruction is being put in the hands of adults who go blind later in life, because we recognize the game changer that Braille can be. I was talking at the brief meeting of the Parents Division on yesterday. You guys also have good stewards of that. And we recognize that if we don't invest a lot of time and effort in helping parents understand that their children have to have high expectations, then we will not be growing this organization. So we were talking about the BEL program, Braille Enrichment Literacy Through Early Learning. And it's a two-week summer program because we recognize that it's a lie being told to many students with low vision. Oh, you can see well enough so that you don't need Braille. Even though your nose is on the paper and you're hunched over, you can still read well enough. We recognize that that's going to limit that blind child, so we recognize that they need to learn Braille. The BEL program helps those low-vision students who the school system has not recognized as a blind student needing Braille to be successful, and we bring them in because we see the problem and we become our own solution. We bring these blind students in for 2 weeks, and we teach them that Braille is fun. We don't sit around and have them read Braille books all day. We teach them that Braille is fun. You get a cupcake, and you get some M&Ms, and you put some Braille on top of the cupcakes to spell things with the cupcakes and the M&Ms and Braille. You make it fun. So when you recognize that Braille is fun, then you recognize that Braille is useful. So that's the whole focus of the Braille, the BEL program. We are looking for 3 new affiliates to participate. When I was the president of the Georgia affiliate, we had the BEL program in Atlanta. The next year, we had it in Atlanta and Savannah. And this past year, we had it in Atlanta and Savannah again. And we're hoping that New York can be one of those new 3 affiliates. The Parents Division seems very proactive, and they seem like in the discussion that the BEL program is a potential. So hopefully in next year's presidential report, which President Jacobson did a wonderful job this morning, you'll be able to talk about the BEL program being one of the accomplishments over the past year. We have the Braille Readers or Leaders program. How many people have participated in the Braille Readers or Leaders program? It's the 30th anniversary of this program. We've added an adult component to the program, so it's not just for youth anymore. I started participating. I didn't do as well as I would have hoped, but I was in the game. And I want to encourage all of you guys to get in the game of the Braille Readers or Leaders. The national organization has a tremendous ability to affect the lives of blind people because we have influence. Just as an inside track, we just had a meeting recently with the Assistant Secretary of the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation Services, excuse me, Dr. Alexa Posney. If you were at the national convention, you got to hear her presentation, and you heard after she presented that I told that she had committed to meeting with us about Braille. So she came through on that promise, and she came to the National Center. We met with her and her staff, and we talked about Braille and how important it is, and there are 2 things that we really focused on highlighting in that meeting. One is in the last amendments of the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, there was a presumption of Braille, meaning that students who are receiving services under IDEA, under the IDEA, under blindness, Braille is presumed necessary unless the team otherwise states that it's not. It sounds good in law, but in practice it wasn't being implemented. So we talked to Dr. Posney, and she has agreed that we're going to be working on putting some technical assistance together and hopefully getting some new policy guidance that strengthens the requirement for Braille, even for those students who otherwise people say that they're not good enough to read Braille. And as again, we've identified the problem, so we're focusing on a solution under the Affiliate Action Department. We're working on a national media a national reading media assessment. And this assessment will help determine whether or not a child with low vision, we'll say, or blind needs Braille. Some of the things that we've dealt with are you have a blind student. We call everyone blind, but they say it's low vision. And they say that this person does not read, does not need to learn Braille because they can read print along with their sighted peers. But that's when you're reading on the second or third grade level. But as your coursework increases, the volume of reading increases, the fatigue is going to set in, and that person who does not learn to read Braille is going to be left behind their sighted peers as the coursework gets stronger and larger. We're looking for new ideas around Braille. So in what I'm listening, what I'm telling you today, as you listen, please think, how can I be a part of what's going on? What can I bring to the table in the form of ideas, in the form of support, in the form of your personal resources to make this happen? I'm going to take a little tangent. Since we're talking about this, it reminded me, I was in an IEP meeting, and I think I may have said this at a national convention, but I don't know if you guys were there, and I don't recall what I told this story, but yeah, there you go. Carl was in the restroom. He wasn't eligible for a door prize either. But I sat in this IEP, and the teacher was saying, oh, this low vision student, he's fine. He reads print, and it's just like, and this is what I love, that when they try to use our data against us. The Federation believes that a student who can read equivalent to their peers does not need Braille. They can read print equivalent to their peers. And she was saying, well, the average low vision reader reads this. And I just sat there and laughed, and they thought I was crazy. I said, you don't understand. We're not talking about reading along with their low vision peers. We're saying if they can read along with their sighted peers at the same rate. We set an expectation for us to be competitive with the sighted, not with the low vision. We set our goals so that blind people can be competitive with the sighted. And within that IEP, we were able to enforce the provision of Braille to that particular student. So we have to continue to adjust the paradigm so they understand that we're not trying to be competitive within a subset of society. We want to be an integral part, an active participant of society. I already mentioned about some of the things that the Field Action Department is doing, but before I go into all of them, just for your edification, you know, there are five executive directors that keep the national office flowing. Many of them don't get the accolades that they need because it's not a tangible affiliate-related responsibility. But John Burgum is now the executive director of operations. He handles a lot of IT and all that kind of stuff within. He has some big shoes to fill. That was the position formerly held by Mrs. Jernigan. So he has done a good job of keeping everything flowing within the office, but there would be nothing to keep flowing if the building and the structure, et cetera, was not in place. And Mr. Cheadle is the executive director, and he makes sure that the building stays sound and the air conditioning works quite right. If you guys have visited the National Center, you recognize what a treasury is for us to have it. And those are the individuals that maintain the infrastructure of what it's all about. The programs within that building, one is the Affiliate Action Department. That executive director is Dr. Joanne Wilson. Let me tell you about some of the things they're doing creatively in the Affiliate Action Department, and a lot of it is related to education. The Teachers for Tomorrow, a Teachers of Tomorrow program, are you guys familiar with that? Mm-hmm. We had a cohort, we had blind TVIs, well, teachers of blind students, come in, and we were teaching them the Federation philosophy because it's important for them to understand as they're working with these blind students that we believe in setting high expectations. The best way to do that is to immerse them in what we believe is right. This upcoming cohort of teachers of blind students, Teachers Tomorrow, from across the nation will consist of 25 teachers from across the country. So that is going to be a tremendous impact because it's going to be exponential. You know, we'll tell those 25 teachers and they'll tell 25 teachers and so on and so on. So we'll grow this so that we can make sure we make an impact. We have information about this program. If you go to teachblindstudents.org, you can get more information about it. Now, I heard the presentations from your five stellar scholarship winners this morning. To support more of the college growth, the Affiliate Action operates a program called the College Leadership Program. So if you have individuals who are college students who don't quite necessarily win a national scholarship, because we can only award 30, and I'll talk about that later, the College Leadership Program is a tremendous opportunity to get them assistance to attend the national convention and also the Washington Seminar. We recognize that we need to invest our time and our talent and making sure that these young blind students get the skills that they need in order to carry forth this organization. As Carl said, the organization will not retire. The people may, but the organization will not. And in line with what I was saying earlier, we invest our time and our resources in the parent leadership program as well. And we try to get the parents to a place where they're interacting with other parents and they can commiserate, but they can also share in strategies of success that they've used for their students, for their blind children. In order to help with this, we need you to continue to make referrals. We need to know, who are those college students that are not being touched by the organization? Who are those parents that aren't aware of the organization? So if you can continue to make referrals, then we can continue to grow the organization. Another department within the national office that helps grow our organization is the National Federation of the Blind Journey Institute Education Programs. Now, we have started to refer to the national office, not as the National Center for the Blind, but more and more as the entire facility, the National Federation of the Blind Journey Institute. It is the first research institute built by blind people. If you're a member of this organization, if you contributed to this organization, then you can take pride in the wonderful facility that is on that whole city block in Baltimore, Maryland. One of the new programs that I was interested to hear about, in relationship to Braille, we recognize that literacy is important, but another thing that's important, one gentleman at the town hall yesterday made so very evident, is the increase of independent mobility skills. So we've started the Early Explorers Program. Now, the Early Explorers Program is going to work with kids from birth to seven, because we believe that a blind kid needs a cane as soon as a sighted kid learns to crawl and walk. So we want to make sure that blind children learn to be as mobile and as independent as their sighted peers. We're starting early. Early intervention is the key. Participating in this program, these individuals will be consulted, the parents will be worked with, so that they can understand that the expectation of literacy is also accompanied by the expectation of free, independent mobility. So to foster that, we'll provide them with free canes and also DVDs to help them understand different cane techniques and strategies that they can use to help encourage their child to be independent traveler. One of the biggest programs that I love is the NFBU SLAM. The NFBU SLAM, this year we brought about 140 kids to the National Center. Students, I gotta stop saying kids. 140 students to the National Center, and they learned about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Now, when they're in their home school systems, many of their teachers are saying, you can't do this, you can't participate in biology, you can't participate in chemistry. But that's just a lie, because we know through the adaptive technology and adaptive skills that blind people can be just as effective in those particular curriculums as any other student. And we bring them to the USLAM to make sure that they understand that. One of the most powerful things I love in this whole presentation is we're sitting there and we talk to these kids. And we say, you're gonna go back to your school system and they're gonna say, you can't participate in biology. And we tell them to say, slam that. See, that's as close as we can come. You know, we don't want to make them deviates. But man, it's so funny. I got up and I was telling these kids this, and then in one of the forums, Dr. Mauer came up and he started speaking to them. And I don't know whether he was aware of this or not, but Dr. Mauer would say, and you're going to go back to your school system, they're going to say that you can't participate in biology. And the kid said, slam that! And he caught him by surprise. And I thought I was going to get kicked out of the organization, but he loved it. It empowers those kids, and they really believe in themselves, and I think that that's powerful. But one of the things that was very telling about this, at the end of that week-long experience, setting new boundaries for them as students in the STEM curriculum, we got them exposed to the future potential that they probably never thought would exist. You heard about our blind driver challenge. We're developing non-visual interfaces that allow a blind person to drive a car. At the end, the closing ceremony, Mark Riccobono, the first blind driver, and Anil Lewis, the insurance, just in case you guys didn't remember, the insurance of the blind driver, we got to drive those students around the city block. We had three students in the car. We were just driving around the block over and over and over. It was awesome, and the kids just loved it. And that's what it's all about. So in order to keep this particular research project going, and that's exactly what it is, we do intend to make it possible for a blind person to independently drive a vehicle, but that's probably gonna come through a collaboration of a variety of different technologies, including our initiative. But we're starting a blind driver training program. Now, I don't know what it's all about, but if you're interested in being a blind driver, and I'm going to tell you, oh, it is awesome, then you need to go ahead and contact Mr. Mark Riccobono at our national office. So get your name on that list, and we'll see how it plays out. Another component of the NFBJI is the Jacobus Timbrook Library. I love in the literature it says it's our library, and it's true. Because it's about time. If you're going to have a research library, you have to have a library component. If you're going to have a research center, you have to have a library component. We've done a tremendous job of archiving a lot of the materials related to the organization. We've digitized all the Braille monitors from, I think, 1957. Carl called me the other day, and he was telling me how he was reading some of the old articles. Excuse me. And some of it is, like someone said earlier, it's sad that it seems like it's just today, that it's still relevant today. But some of it also gives you an idea of how far we've come as an organization. So when you go to the National Center, please take the time to go see the Timbrook Library. Now, the access technology team at the NFBJI is doing a tremendous job of doing things as well. One of the big kind of groundstone initiatives that we've helped to start through the efforts of our community, you hear about it later, is the eBay Entrepreneur Program. Jonas is going to be here talking about that on the agenda, so I won't elaborate on it very much, but it is an excellent opportunity, I mean, an excellent example of how we are striving toward accessibility to access information over the internet, et cetera, will turn into opportunities for blind people that otherwise would not exist. So we're talking about web accessibility. Here again, we identify the problem. We want to be part of the solution. Next Monday, we will have a web accessibility training day. We're bringing in individuals from government and corporate organizations to our national center, and we're going to teach them the ins and outs of making their websites accessible. Here again, creating even more opportunities for blind people to benefit from the information highway. The Access Technology team does a variety of presentations across the country. I think they're becoming more and more the go-to, as Carl was saying, individuals when you're talking about access to blind people to technology. We have an AT blog. We have technology resources on the web as a technology resource page. And we also have consumer electronics tips, et cetera, on the page. So if you visit the nfb.org site, you'll be able to access a lot of that information as well. And that's us, again, identifying the problem, coming up with the solution. Now, Carl already talked about this next feature, the NFB Newsline Register. Now, you guys have done a tremendous job of shepherding some legislation through State Assembly? And it's on the governor's desk, waiting for his signature. Now, I don't know who the powers that be that think it's important for them to obstruct this. I don't know who wants to remain in an area of ignorance so badly that they would want this bill not to pass. I don't know who is out there that wants to stay so uninformed about the world around them that they don't think that this bill should be passed, but hey, we gotta tell them to sit down and shut up. We gotta get down there and we gotta make sure that the governor recognizes that this is a true tool for providing more independence and full participation of blind people and print disabled individuals in this community. If he does not sign it, I would be surprised. But if he does not sign it, I will also be disappointed. But I think that with the powers that be within this room, that's not even something I even need to think about. The Newsline, as Carl said, has added some new features. The job listing is a tremendous feature. I think that any state rehab agencies would also be worth their salt in advocating for the provision of this particular service, hint, hint. And it's also expanded search features. We've added international magazines, which I love that because it's not just a tool that we can use because thanks to people like Cheryl Echeverria, blind people are leaving the borders of this country, traveling in new places, and we want to read about them before we get there so we'll know. So the Newsline is a tremendous tool toward promoting the individuals that are blind and print disabled because it gives us access to information. The target advertisements have been added. You can also have them emailed to you. And then most importantly, I think this is the wonderful bridge because what happens is people think that it's an either or, but it's not. The Newsline is a tremendous complement to the services provided by the National Library Services. So in line with that, we've added a feature to the Newsline that allows an individual to download the newspapers in a digital talking book format on a cartridge, and it is able to be played on the NLS reading machine. So that's a wonderful partnership that we as an organization have with the National Library Service. Now, I hope that you guys are really up for advocating for the Newsline service, and I hope that you're up for advocating for the other blind initiatives of the National Federation of the Blind. The Legislative Agenda of Blind Americans is discussed at our Washington seminar. How many people have attended a Washington seminar? Excellent. That is a tremendous empowering opportunity for us to bring our message to the people who make public policy around blindness issues. It'll be happening next year in 2012, February 6th through 9th. The Great Gathering Inn, a tremendous big pep rally, will be happening on February 6th, and throughout the rest of the week, we'll be making appointments going to the Capitol Hill and tap, tap, tapping down the halls of these public policy arenas. The third program-oriented department within the National Center is the Governmental Affairs Office. That's where I work, so it's the best division in the National Center. And I'm gonna tell you, people say, oh man, he is so cocky and arrogant. Yeah, absolutely. And I want you guys to be too. Whatever you do, I want you to feel that you're the best at it. And whatever you're participating in, I want you to think that you're the best at it. If you don't think that the New York affiliate is the best affiliate in the complete organization, then you're missing out. You're missing out.
Don't worry about it.
There you go. Speaking of cocky and arrogant. All right, so the Governmental Affairs Office. Birds of a feather do flock together. You're absolutely right.
Let the church say amen.
Amen. All right. Most recently, we had a tremendous, I love this. One of the first opportunities I got to actually practice some civil disobedience was a knack tracking event down in Florida. So I love the fact that we can get together and make a difference. It just shocks people that blind people can be this organized, but I love doing it. So most recently, and New York doesn't have a senator that's serving on the HELP committee, we had 21 protests across the country in 16 of our affiliates protesting the Workforce Investment Act reauthorization, which contains Section 511, which links the provision of subminimum wages. That's why I'm glad that Carl had the money passing out the coins. You have to engage in that paradigm shift to understand what this is all about. For over 70 years, it's been legal to pay people with disabilities less than the minimum wage. The Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, Section 14C, allows this as a legal provision. Section 511 in the reauthorization links these two. There's never been a reference of providing subminimum wage employment to individuals with disabilities in the Rehab Act. It's contrary to the Act. The Rehab Act is all about empowerment of people with disabilities toward full employment. Why add a provision that offers the opportunity for people to be placed in subminimum wage and get some type of credit for it? So we took it to 21 different offices across the country, 16 states of the 22 members of the HELP committee. Other members who weren't protested had already come to us and expressed their particular support of our endeavor. It's so funny, we went to Senator Mikulski's office in Maryland, who's on the HELP committee. Oh, it's about 100 people going up and down the sidewalk. It was amazing. And rather than getting the obvious, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that. She was like, man, I wish I was there. I'd be right there in line with you. So that's the type of message. We're finding people who are working with us toward fulfilling our goal. In order to prohibit this deplorable exploitation of people with disabilities, we're going to be introducing the Fair Wages Act. Now, our Fair Wages Bill is going to make it possible for people with disabilities, period. It's not just a segue for blind individuals, because the 14C provision is exploitative of all people with disabilities. Now, I have to admit, when I was given this charge, I was thinking that there are a population of people who can't do it. There are a population of people who really obviously cannot be gainfully employed. I did my research and I found that through customized employment, supportive employment, and a variety of different creative job strategies, even people that the workshops have turned down said that are unemployable, people with tremendous resources, creativity, and innovation have employed the most significantly disabled individual in the community making a fair wage. So they're experiencing the same exploitation that we've experienced over years due to people's myths and stereotypes that are erroneous. So in order to make it right, we have to make it right for everybody. We have to repeal this offensive legislation and make it possible for people with disabilities to earn fair wages. The other legislative initiatives we're working on are the ADBOA, the Americans with Disabilities Business Opportunity Act, another cross-disability piece of legislation. But it's easy to make sure that individuals with disabilities, because there's so much language around it, are labeled as socially disadvantaged. I used my slate and I screwed that up. And that's just in order to get a preference for government contracting, as well as assistance through the Small Business Act. The other piece is the Technology Bill of Rights. We've kind of carved off a piece of it so that we can start making some progress, and we're calling it our Home Appliances Accessibility Act. And what we're hoping to do is make non-visual access to home appliances and home medical equipment. You'll hear about more of these as you go to the Washington seminar. Excuse me. We have the Blind Persons Return to Work Act. Every time I've been in an organization, there's been something about Social Security until recently. That's only because the Social Security Administration is putting together the benefits offset, the benefits offset national demonstration project, which is very much in line with the legislation that we were proposing. It's a two-for-one spinoff of the benefits. So we're trying to see what results from that particular demonstration project so we'll know as a national organization how we need to move forward. As I said earlier, I served at the scholarship committee chair. We have a national scholarship program with over 30 scholarships every year, but that's augmented by the college leadership program. The Jacob Bolotin Awards also, if you have individuals or entities that are doing something tremendous related to blind individuals, maybe like the Excelsior Group, that you feel could be nominated for a Jacob Bolotin Award. It's a cash award to help support those initiatives and move them forward. All of these things we cannot do if we don't raise money. I know this is the part of the church sermon when everybody starts trying to leave the congregation, start passing the plate. But I encourage you, if you believe in the things that I just talked about, then we have to support it with not only just our talent, we also have to support it with our financial resources. The easiest way for you to do that is to participate in the Imagination Fund. The Imagination Fund, you can go online and actually become an Imaginator. I've been doing a little bit better. So I'm going to pledge to continue to do even better. But you can also still text to give at 859 844 and text the word blind. 859-44 blind. And you can make a donation just via a cell. And one of the new innovators to be a giver, and I've joined this society, is the Jacobus Timbrook Legacy Society. If you have a life insurance policy, will, bequest, et cetera, just make sure that the Federation is involved in that, because I, like Carl was saying, want the organization to continue far beyond my existence here on this earth. So I've become a member of the Jacobus Timbrook Legacy Society. This has already been a tremendous convention. I'm sure that the agenda, as written, is going to be a tremendous, empowering experience. But if you want to exponentially experience what's going on this weekend, you have to start making plans now to attend the national convention, which in 2012 will be held at the Hilton Anatol. Excuse me, the room rates are $63 for singles and doubles, $68 for triples and quads. I love saying triples and quads because it makes it sound like people with disabilities in wheelchairs are also welcome to come. Dallas, Texas. I'm sorry, the Hilton Anatol in Dallas, Texas. So make your plans to be there. I don't want anybody saying, oh, it's too expensive. If you start planning now, put a little money aside, you can make it. And I'm going to part with this, and I'm just going to be real. People were very excited about the Orlando convention, and it was awesome because it was a new venue, it was a new location. And I've been hearing people, and they come to me, and I'm glad when they come to me because it gives me a chance to give them a reality check. Oh, I don't want to go to Texas. We've been to Texas. Oh, it's so hot in Texas. I'm going to tell you something. I don't care how hot it is. I don't care how many times we've been there. If we don't come together as a family and that convention assembled every year to replenish everyone's energy, to set direction for the agenda for this organization for another year, to elect the leaders of this organization, to learn and grow as an organization, to continue to build on our collective action, why are you even here? Why are you even here? Make plans to be in Dallas at the Hilton Anatol. I'll see you there. Thank you all for your time and attention.